In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB. My other hosts for this wonderful episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Jeremy, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you?
The fans can find me on Twitter at JTSchill20, and I am doing well.
Terrence, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I am excellent. The Red Sox exceeded my expectations this series by winning it. I didn't think it, the way the Seattle series ended, I thought we could be in rough shape here. And Cleveland was fresh off of winning the series 2 out of 3 against the Yankees. So we end up taking 2 out of 3. Probably should have been 3 out of 3, but, you know, Tanner Houck kind of slipped up there in the first inning, gave up 4 runs, and then Trevor Story was pretty much useless in that final at-bat with 2 runners in scoring position. So we'll settle for 2 out of 3. Red Sox are second in the American League East, 2 games above 500, 2 games back from the New York Yankees. And as Jeremy astutely pointed out, we are in possession of the final wild card, which is so critical in April. Thank goodness we are in possession of that.
Yeah, might have been a different show. And since everything is going well so far, let's literally just get right into this. So, studs, Jeremy, hit us with your stud for this one. Who'd you have?
So, it's the spot and where he is in his season for me. It's Brian Bayo. We split the doubleheader. The series could go either way. And he comes out and has a quality start. So a quality start is 6 innings, 3 earned runs. Walked 3, which I don't love, pitches. And he gave the club what they needed to win the series. I'll discuss a little bit of the other side of this with my dud. But for me, Buehler and Bayo created stability within this series, allowed us to win the series. And I just think Bayo coming off a injury, I think his first 2 starts really go to how he's prepared for the season despite the injury. It's very easy to go coming back from an injury, not be stretched out, not be ready to go, and kind of get up to speed at the big league level and cost your team a couple of games. He's done the exact opposite. He's pitched really well. And we've won. He's 2-0. We've won both of his starts. I think that just goes to his preparation after the club left Fort Myers. He hangs back, but he puts in the work. He's ready to start the season, being a productive member of this rotation. So really happy with where he's at. And frankly, we need him. We're going to rely on him all year.
Terry.
Yeah, you know, he hasn't really looked – like, I can't say that he's taken a step forward, but he's pitched well enough these two starts. It's too bad Nolan Jones got to him there in the sixth inning, gave up that three-run homer. We were way ahead, so it wasn't really, you know, a critical spot. But it would have been nice to see him get out scoreless. His earned run average would have been down a little lower. What kind of impressed me was the first and second inning, he gave up a leadoff double both times and was able to kind of pitch around the base runners. So I guess my big takeaway here is he looks comfortable on the mound. He looks poised. He's not getting in his own head, and he's buckling down, and he's getting guys out. And other than the three-run shot, like I said, you know, he's keeping runners coming from home. Good defense kind of helps, though. You know, he hasn't had that in previous seasons, so he's got the best defense in the infield here. And it was a great start. And I was today Logan Allen? I forget. But the matchup didn't look like a super favorable matchup going in. Like I couldn't at the start of the game, I wasn't supremely confident that we were going to necessarily pull this one out, but we did.
Yeah. So I'll say this much. Has he looked fantastic? No, but he's done his job. He came out, he gave you six quality innings, you know, just under 100 pitches. He gave up a home run to someone who's been irrelevant all season, got his first home run of the season, literally Nolan Jones, who used to play in Cleveland, then went to Colorado, then is now back in Cleveland, had two RBIs this whole season. So that's literally, he's hitting under 200. He just got a hold of one. That's literally it. So honestly, outside that one blip, he did fantastic, especially since this is just his second start of the year. I can't say anything bad about it. Am I going to say he's taking a step forward? No, but Terry, he just got back. Like, if we're going to be realistic with ourselves, we have to temper expectations. We can't assume he's going to strike out 10 and go seven innings, you know, like Garrett Crochet probably would if he came back from a rehab. So I'm okay with the fact that he gave you six innings. Like you mentioned already, we're already up by nine at the end of the day. Okay. You're still up by six. I don't think the doors are going to get blown off in the very, very small, small, minute chance that we could end up blowing a nine run lead. Okay. Then we're talking about it differently, but that's not going to happen on a regular weekend. So credit Bayo for being able to do what he's done. You know, game two of the season for him, a win in the books. I'm all for it. Jeremy, anything else you want to add since this was your stud specifically?
No.
Cool. Bayo's also 2-0 now on the season. So that's another little plus. Terry, who'd you have for your stud?
I am going to go with Seydon Rafaela. Had a relatively quiet series before today, but kind of exploded with a three-run homer today, kind of late in the game, but drove in five overall. Was 1-for-4 in the first game of the doubleheader. But what's equally impressive here is no strikeouts, no walks either. Still hoping we can draw some of those, but he's looking really good in his at-bats. And if he can have a breakout year, it kind of looks like he's on the verge of a breakout. And if it happens, that's going to be an extremely productive bat from the right side of the plate. And it's going to bolster the bottom third of our lineup, which in turn, if he's hitting in the 8 or 9 hole like he normally does, he's just going to be on base, just kind of teeing up another run for Duran or Devers. So, and he's giving you elite defense out there. I think he's almost as good as Jackie Bradley. If he had that same cannon of an arm that Bradley had, I would say it's pretty much equal. And there's very little he can't get to out there. And a lot of people want Roman Anthony up. I kind of want Roman Anthony up, but you know, he had a bit of a shoulder issue down in Worcester. And I think he might've got hit or maybe fouled the ball off himself or something. He got removed from the game on Saturday. I forgot to follow up on that. I think we'd know by now if it was serious, but anyway, you know, for as long as Rafaela is producing, I don't see the real rush to necessarily bring up Anthony. And I said earlier in the season, if Rafaela has a big year, I think we can safely assume the other pieces are going to fall into place as they essentially have. This is going to be a really fun, really dynamic, really robust offense, and perhaps one of the best in the American League. So hopefully he can keep it up.
So with Rafael, I know one thing that you've talked about with him in the past is the fact that he just doesn't draw walks. And since April 7th, he's only drawn two. That wasn't a case here. And, you know, since the 18th of April, he hadn't knocked in a run and had scored a handful of runs so far, but he literally pulled the Trevor Story card out of the deck and won you a game. I mean, literally a home run and five RBIs in the third game of this set did his job. Only 3 for 12 in the total series, unless my numbers are wrong. So the batting average isn't great, but he's hitting it when it needs to be hit. And anyone that saw that home run, in my opinion, I didn't think there was a chance that wasn't going to be a home run. But yeah, to your point, I mean, this is a guy that we were saying doesn't have a spot and is going to be just the utility guy because people are crying for Roman Anthony, and that's going to be the guy that comes in and period, that's it, full stop. If he can continue putting these types of series together, that's going to only create more kind of havoc, chaos for ownership to bring up Anthony or make a decision hastily. It's going to be something that we're going to have to continue monitoring for the next couple series. If Rafael throws up duds on a regular basis, then we're not talking about if Roman Anthony is coming up, it's when. In this circumstance, it's a little bit different. So I don't know if I think that Roman Anthony is just going to come up and sit on Rafael is just going to be the super utility guy on a regular basis. Like, I think there's going to be a chance where it's not just going to be super utility work for him. He's going to find a way to get at bats on a more consistent basis. And we'll just see what happens. I'm very excited. It's always a great thing when you have one guy almost kind of backpack the rest of the team. So it gives the rest of the guys like an opportunity to kind of rest, recover. Five RBIs in a game isn't something that I expect from him all season long, but when it happens, it's something to really appreciate and talk about. Anything else you guys want to add for Rafael?
Yeah,
I haven't.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah,
oh, Jeremy. Sorry. Yeah. My apologies. Sorry.
The host never cut to me. You know, I don't know what that's about.
That's my bad. That's my bad.
Unless he said something pre-show to piss Charlie off. But anyways, we can talk about that post-show. Look, I've said this a lot, so I'm going to keep it very brief. But he is a super athletic baseball player. Okay, yeah. So when you hit him, when you get anything from him with his defensive ability, it's a plus. It's almost the way you look at a catcher, because he's that impactful defensively. And then when he does get on base, he turns the lineup over. And then when you have Duran hitting leadoff ahead of Devers, there's so much speed and chaos that can be created with just the two guys on base. Also, you allow for Duran to have an opportunity to drive and run. So it just stretches the lineup. Rafaela getting on base means that Duran, Devers, Bregman, whoever's hitting four gets maybe another at bat in the game. So it's super important. He was 3 for 12 in this series, obviously the huge day on Sunday. He's also here, guys. He's signed to a long-term deal. So I hope it's in center field. And if you ever have a position where you want to move him because of his favorable contract, you want him to be an everyday center fielder to do it, to maximize value. At worst, he's your Hamilton, but he's not just your Hamilton. He's your backup second baseman, backup shortstop, your backup center fielder, who's your best defensive player. He can run. He's super athletic. And when he's right, it just makes the team that much better. Really enjoy watching him find success on Sunday.
And I kind of hope that, you know, he's been benched a couple of times in favor of Hamilton, who, by the way, did not play a single game this series, and we won the series. Another thing, Brad Sandler's mentioning in the comments, why isn't Casas sent down to AAA? And the same thing with Casas. We won both games that he did not play. You had your most dynamic lineups out there, and I think getting back to Rafaela, he hears the noise with Anthony, and maybe there's a chip on his shoulder now that, you know, maybe he's like, I better step up. If I want to be relevant and I want to be a cornerstone guy on this team, I need to step up. So maybe that's what we're seeing in the last week. And I know a week is a short sample size, but he's hitting .273 with a .320 on base. Rafael is, so
not bad
with that.
Let's keep it up. Let's keep it up.
Yeah. Better than his season average, which is .233 right now. So
better than Casas.
Better now. Way better than Casas. Yeah. Anything else we wanted to add? Sorry, Jeremy, my bad.
No, you're all right. I mean, again, the problem with Casas is he has to be driving the ball to impact the game. Rafaela can impact the game in so many different ways. He's like Duran that way. He's just not as dynamic with the bat in his hand. So, you know, I don't want to keep making Casas a fall guy, but Rafaela can go 0-for-4 and impact the game. You know, it's not ideal, but he's capable of doing that. So
underrated base speed as well. I mean, if you need a bag to be stolen, he can certainly do it as well.
First to third, first to home on a ball in the gap. He can do it.
Right.
It's dynamic.
Absolutely. The third stud that we had was Jaren Duran in this series, 7-for-15. Let's see. 3 big runs scored. There's a lot to talk about with Duran right now, but to save it, I mean, stealing home. Did you guys see that play?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was just so great. Like I'm seeing anyone who's seen that play, you're like, all right, why are you playing? Like, what are we doing here? And then it was just like a little bit more. And the pitcher is out to lunch, man. Like, unreal. Stole a base in the first game, stole home in the second game. There was a fun statistic or fun stat that someone had pulled up online that it was almost to the day that Jacoby Ellsbury had stolen home against the New York Yankees. I think it was 15 years to the day, or I don't remember how many years.
It was to the day, absolutely.
Was it 15 years?
I don't 2009, remember. 16 years.
Okay, so 16 years to the day. And I just thought, oh my God, this is awesome. And now we're starting to see Jaren Duran heat up. He kind of was kind of the cooler for a little bit. And all of a sudden now we've seen someone bust his batting average up from like the 220s, upper two teens. And now he's cranked it up to almost 260 right now. So, past that, it's 276.
70 something.
Yeah. So he's really turned it up over the last couple of weeks, which is great. So your leadoff guy is getting on base and setting the table for everybody else to knock him in. You're doing your job. It's a weird stat line when you have 4 hits in a game and you don't score any runs. It's always interesting, but he did knock in a run himself. I'm just really happy to see what we saw out of him specifically. Only a couple strikeouts, also drew a walk. But again, was able to score 3 runs in the second game of that doubleheader. Super happy to see it for him. The speed is only one aspect of this multi-versatile Swiss Army knife that we have batting leadoff for the Red Sox. So, Jeremy, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, the steal of home wasn't just the steal of home. I mean, he's just coming off a triple. You know, I mean, he hits a ball to right center. He's rounding first. And there's people ahead of him. So he's checking the runners ahead of him. I'm sure he's checking the third base coach, makes the calculated risk, gets in, and then moments later has enough gas in the tank to steal home with an elite slide. You know, I mean, sliding is part of base running, and he is excellent at it. That whole, like, 1 minute in real time was awesome. In the moment, I said to myself, is this, and I know we were already up in that game, but it was like, is this the moment that maybe sparks us? You know, the club sparks the club. So he's seemingly, and look, so last week he goes on the mini hitting streak where he's only getting 1 hit a game, but he's getting on base and he's also hard contact pretty consistently. And I kind of saw the writing on the wall for a big bust out. I'm sorry, I'm boring you, Charlie.
No, dude, I've been up since 3 a.m., bro.
So anyways, I kind of saw it coming, and I'm not surprised to see where he goes 7 for his last 11, and all of a sudden he's 276 is where you kind of want him to be anyways. So I hope that, you know, the early season struggles for him are over. We're going to talk about it in a little bit, but I was also kind of hoping that the documentary has been out long enough that anything that was lingering from that, media obligations, people calling him, asking about him, dealing with his parents, finding out about it for the first time, is kind of over. And he's just moving on with being a baseball player. I've loved Jaren Duran. I think he's a great player. I love his story. If you haven't seen the documentary, he comes out looking like just a humble, well-grounded, comes from a great family dude, which just makes it easier to root for a guy I already liked. And then they also do a great job of cutting back to his struggles when he was a skinny kid with a shaved head. And it's amazing to see how far he's come in light of where his mental health was. So if you don't root for Jaren Duran, I can't imagine why, but he's fun to watch play. He's my favorite current Red Sox player, as my son asked me all the time. And the Red Sox go as Jaren Duran goes. He went in the series. We win the series.
To your point too, Jeremy, real quick, before we have Terry go, Jaren Duran is one of the reasons why, not just that triple, the stealing of home, but he's one of the reasons why we're knocking runs in, we're scoring runs early. Like, we went up 6-0 in game two and we're in the third inning. So when you can put up six runs in the first three innings, you're really setting the table for your team and your guys to get the job done. Game three, hold my beer, 50% increase in return. Instead of a 6-0 lead, you're up 9-0. So if you're able to generate these runs and score runs and create opportunities, you should be winning two out of three games, three out of four games. You should be taking the series. There's no reason why you can't. And like you said, now Jaren Duran is becoming that player from last year that's not just getting a single a game or getting on base once a game. It's multiple times a game. He's drawing walks. He's scoring runs. He's knocking in runs. He's getting tripled. He's doing everything that we know that Jaren Duran can do. So it's really great to see him doing that. And it's awesome to see him do it in the first couple innings of a game, because other teams don't know what to do. And it's also burning out pitchers. He's getting in pitchers' heads. If you look at that play again, when he's kind of teetering, like left and right, taking a couple steps, going back, it reminds me of that major league film with like Wesley Snipes, who's going up, going back, going up, going back. And he's getting in pitchers' heads. And that pitcher was not ready, nor did he think for one second that Jaren Duran was going to steal home. So, Terry, we haven't let you speak. I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah, when he stole home, I tweeted out that could be the spark that fires up the rest of the team, because this team has not, I mean, we're barely above 500 right now. We have not fired on all cylinders, and it's been the offense a lot of the time. It's been the bullpen some of the time, but you just kind of hope that would spark something, and I think it did, because you go back to today, I mean, Christian Campbell came home on a heads-up play on basically an errant throw from the center fielder, ends up scoring. That was a nice heads-up play. Somebody else stole home. I don't think it was Duran, but it was an inning or two after that. Just lots of – you could just see how much more the team was locked in after Duran stole that base. So hopefully it continues. Another thing I want to point out here is – let's not forget how unexpected this meteoric rise was from Duran. I mean, he was written off. He was a busted prospect, and he got the first call up because he got hot. And I don't think anybody really expected him to really do much, but we needed an outfielder. You know, he was the hot hand at the time. And you look at what Christian Campbell is doing right now. He's a stud prospect. He's hitting, let's see, 305. He's got an OPS of 886. He's living up to the hype. He's a top prospect who is living up to the hype. Jaren Duran was never that guy. He had his breakout at the major league level when Adam Duvall broke his wrist. That's what gave him the opportunity to essentially become Jaren Duran, you know, one of the best leadoff hitters in Major League Baseball. I think he finished fifth or sixth last year in total war. And so, like Jeremy, he's my favorite player as well. And, you know, he's been on a couple different sides of controversy, some of which we may get to here in a second, you know, good and bad against him. But yeah, I'm a huge Durant fan, and it was a good series. And I gave, you know, Rafaela's last 15 games, Jaren Durant hitting .299 with a .347 on base. And then if you want to go by just the last week, he's hitting .406 with a .441. So he started to heat up in that White Sox series. Only one home run in the last couple weeks. I said this winter, I'd love to see him find his power stroke, because I think it's there. I think he does have a 25 to 30 home run season in him. Maybe it's not going to be this year, but I do think he can become a bona fide power hitter. So, but if he doesn't, we'll certainly take what he's giving us right now. And, you know, because he impacts the game in a ton of different ways. But man, that was a lot of fun. And one other thing I wanted to note about the steal of home, I don't think he was planning on it, because if you guys notice, he still had his gloves in his hand. He hadn't even put his gloves in his pocket there. It just kind of materialized. It just materialized.
I'm 100% with you. And it was the, am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? And he's like, this pitcher's not clocking this. He hasn't moved. He's still not in the zone. I think he's still upset that he gave up the triple. And you're right. I don't think he thought he was going to do it until the moment where he did it, where it was just like, F it, go.
Yeah.
You know, like that's literally how I felt too. I'm with you.
It may have been that pitcher's, I think that was Nikhazy. I forget his first name. It might have been his first ever start too. So, you know, just kind of a rookie mistake there. And Jaren Durant taught him a lesson.
One he definitely won't forget for a very, very long time. A couple of honorable mentions in this game. I don't think we can not talk about the relievers for 1 second. Pitching is the position that wins ball games. That's what gets you into the playoffs. That's what gets you to the World Series. You had three different relievers in three different games in this series. Bernardino, Weissert, and Guerrero were game one. You had Wilson, Slayton, Chapman game two. You had Whitlock, Newcomb, and Hendricks in game three. So no one pitched twice in the series. Your starters were able to give you quality starts, which is really, really important. Was it the prettiest game each game? No. You know what? You score 6 runs in a game, you score 9 runs in a game, and then you start to allow a couple runs. You've already kind of given yourself the buffer. They combined to allow 1 run on 4 hits, walking 2, striking out 14. One of the better series that you're going to see from 9 relievers that get used. Sometimes you're going to see one guy get used twice. That wasn't the case in this series. So for those that are keeping track, that's a 14 K9 right there. That's pretty damn good. That's past elite level. I'm super impressed with what we saw in this series. I'm really happy that Hendricks was able to do what he did. I'm happy that Bernardino was able to do what he did, because I don't have the most trust in him. Whitlock was the only reliever that didn't register at least 1 strikeout. Everybody else got at least 1. Everybody else did their job. Alex Cora did a great job of managing the bullpen in this series. That has been one of his problems this year. He has not done the best job, not giving people the opportunity to handle clean innings. Each guy in this situation, for the most part, was able to get out of it unscathed with no issues. So full credit to those 9 gents that came out, did their job, to Alex Cora, who knew which person to put in for which inning, because truth be told, Cleveland's a team that is scary. Like, they've always had our number for decades. The 90s, they were our like Achilles heel. We could never get past Cleveland. I was so sick of seeing the Cleveland then Indians face the Boston Red Sox in the late 90s, because we always got knocked out in the ALDS. Super frustrating. When we beat them, then we had to deal with the Yankees. It was just a damned situation. But those 9 relievers, fantastic job. Rafael Devers also did really well in a couple of these games. Got a couple of home runs. He's starting to get hot. The home runs that he's hitting, no doubters. Outfielders aren't thinking they have a chance at it. It's just kind of look up and watch it go. And then Alex Bregman as well. 4-for-13 in the series. No home run. I'm okay with that. A couple of doubles, which is great. I'm not going to complain, considering this is someone who won us a game not too recently. So I'm okay with that. Drew a couple of walks, struck out a couple times. Again, that's going to happen. You're going to take your licks. Anybody else that you guys wanted to mention, or if you guys want to talk about either the relievers, Devers, or Bregman?
Nothing for me to add, except for Campbell was 5-for-11, and his consistency from a rookie is very impressive. And Ref Schneider, who should be playing first base, also went 3-for-8.
Abreu went 1-for-3, had a home run, drew a walk. You know, that was another one. He only played one game. Terry, anything else you want to add?
You know, when Rob Ref Schneider is penciled into the lineup, especially against a lefty, just my confidence level goes way up. Just his presence out there. And, you know, he's just so good at everything. He's not elite, but he does a lot of things really well. And then I thought I had one more. Abreu had a 3-run shot in game one, but Hauk had his little blunder there. Narvaez was 2-for-5 today. 0-for-3 on the second game of the doubleheader. He did draw a walk. I don't miss Connor Wong, and I'm not saying we couldn't use Connor Wong, but man, that defense. Alex Cora was saying, based on certain metrics, Narvaez is one of the best in baseball right now defensively. So, and I don't know really. I mean, none of his offensive metrics look stellar, but he does just enough. He's not an automatic out when he goes up there.
Right.
He's shown a little bit of pop. So I don't know. I mean, you could still put Wong behind the plate, you know, one or two times a week, maybe play him at first. If Casas, you know, if you prefer him over Casas there, but yeah, I'm just pleasantly surprised with how well Narvaez has played, and we got him from the Yankees. So
we did.
Maybe another sneaky steal like Whitlock a couple years ago, but that's about all I have for honorables.
Yeah, when it gets to the duds, there I want to talk about Sable for a second. You know, Tristan Casas obviously only played in one of the games. The game he played in, we didn't win. So whether that's coincidence or just unlucky, I don't know how you want to look at it, but I feel like Casas for the most part has unfortunately been a dud. So hopefully he can turn it around. Before we get into duds, where do you guys both stand with Blake Sable? Because I was really excited when he became a member of the Red Sox, and I feel like, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Nick on the other show, and no shade at Nick, but I think Nick is like, he's out on Sable. Like, he doesn't want him at all. Are you guys out on Sable, or do you guys want to give this guy a chance? I'm just curious.
I'm honestly out, because the book on him is he can't gun down base runners. That's a huge problem for him. And I just don't think the bat is going to make up for that. So
he did throw somebody out at second for his first cut down runner of the year. But I just don't view him as a big league catcher.
He's 27 years old. There's still like a little bit of time left, but do you guys remember the reaction that the Red Sox had with Ryan LaVarnway years ago? Do you guys remember the name Ryan LaVarnway?
Yeah.
So he was, you know, slowly making his way up. And then if I'm not mistaken, I think it was against Baltimore, at Baltimore, where he had a multi-home run game. And it was like, oh my God, yes, here we go. We finally have a catcher that can field and can also hit. And then I don't know what happened, but it was like he kind of flamed out. It wasn't that he couldn't throw runners out, but we just didn't give him a chance. And he kind of had like a little bit of a career after, you know, Boston, but his career didn't really materialize into anything significant. I would hate to give up on somebody like Blake Sable. I really do want to give him a chance, because you do have to give some players chances, and the catching position is not an easy one. Like, there are very few catchers that are very good in Major League Baseball. There are only a handful that are worth anything. The others are just plug and plays, you know? So I'm curious to know if Sable in the near future, within the next couple of years, could potentially be an answer. Maybe not as the everyday starter, but perhaps as the backup guy. So, Jeremy, you're shaking your head. You're already thinking no.
No, I don't think he's a big league catcher. I mean, you had defense first at that position. I think Narvaez and Wong complement each other well, and you know, no catching duo stays healthy all year. So you really need to have three guys that can play. So I mean, if he's the third catcher and Wong's, I think already out on a rehab assignment, so he should be back within a week. I'm okay. Sable did his job. He didn't like kill you. He didn't, you know, wasn't embarrassing, but I think he should go back down and be ready for the next time somebody gets nicked up. And that might be a spot they look to improve, you know, prior to the trade deadline. We'll see.
Go ahead, Charlie.
No, I was going to say a couple of years ago, before he did make his jump to the majors in 2022, he was really good in double and triple A. Like, I know it's a couple of years ago. He's 24 years old. He's 27 now. Last year didn't do poorly, didn't do great, but 2024 was the year after he kind of took like a little bit of a downcline. I don't know. I'm just curious to see where his ceiling is. I really hope it's not, we've already seen it and it's just not going to work out. I really was excited when he joined on, but Terry, you want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, getting back to Narvaez, he is in the 100th percentile with blocks above average. So that's what Cora was getting at. Like,
wow.
You need a guy to lock it down to just, as far as defense goes, he's your guy. He's also in the 87th percentile when it comes to framing. So that's essentially also elite. So as far as offense goes, he's in the 76th percentile with barrel rate, which is good, but the exit velocity, bat speed, a lot of that stuff is more in the average area. So, but you'll take an elite defender for sure.
For sure. Perfect. Well, series obviously went well. Now we get to talk about the guys that didn't necessarily do great. So Jeremy, why don't you lead us off with your dud?
Yeah, so in my stud pick, I was just talking about Bayo, where he was in his preparation coming off an injury. But it really came down to that start, because we have a split doubleheader. You know, all the momentum's kind of with the Red Sox coming out of the big win on Saturday night. And Logan Webb really never gave him a chance. 4 1/3, didn't get out of the fifth, which was a big inning for the Sox. He gave up 9 hits.
Logan Allen, you mean?
Sorry, Logan Allen. Seven runs all earned. And in addition to the 9 hits, he walked 3 guys. So obviously the Red Sox offense gets credit there, but tough spot. And obviously the series swung on starting pitching in game 3 of this series.
Gary.
Yeah, I mean, Allen got destroyed today. 7 earned, walked 3, only struck out 2. It just seemed like the Red Sox, I think the momentum from yesterday kind of carried into this game, but we essentially buried him. And he had like a 2.11 ERA. Not that, you know, we're into big sample sizes at this point in the season, but it was definitely a start that made me nervous, you know, a matchup rather that made me nervous, and the bats just took care of him, and the defense took care of Bayo, and it all worked out well for us. But Allen could be one of their better pitchers now. Surprisingly, Tristan McKenzie, who I thought was going to be maybe a perennial Cy Young contender, was DFA'd by them earlier in the week. So that's interesting. But Cleveland does have a very good pitching program. So if Detroit doesn't run away with it, and they might, who knows? I think Detroit has the best rotation in the American League, maybe one of the best, the very best in all the majors right now. So it'll be interesting to see what the Guardians do in that central race.
So the third game of this series, I was actually curious to see, can Bayo, you know, repeat what he's able to do in the first game of the season that he's had. He's obviously only played twice, or pitched twice. Logan Allen is averaging over five innings over his last three games, over five innings, under four hits, and averaging five strikeouts in appearance. So five strikeouts, five innings, and he's allowed one total earned run in 15 plus. So my brain was going, all right, he's going to shut the Red Sox down for five innings. This was his worst start of the season. He'd allowed five total earned runs all year in four starts. His ERA was 2.11 before today. And that has since ballooned now to, I have to look at it, 4.21. So every once in a while, pitchers are going to get tuned. I wasn't sure if it was going to happen today. Truth be told, like, gun in my head, if someone were to say, oh, you think the Red Sox got game three in the bag? No, I wouldn't be able to say that. I hope so. Like, I want the Red Sox to win every game. But I wasn't that confident with Logan Allen. To your point, Terry, Logan Allen is one of the better pitchers that they have, and he's definitely been one of the more consistent ones they've had this season. So a bit of a surprise from Allen, a bit of a clunker, only struck out two guys, walked three, the home run as well. It wasn't his day. He gave up a home run to Ref Snyder, and to your point, you know, whenever lefties in the lineup, lefties in the rotation for our opponents and Ref Snyder's in the lineup, you feel a little warm and fuzzy. Well, he ended up reaping the benefits of that by ripping a home run to left for whatever, 360 feet, and got the scoring started for the Red Sox. So, here's the thing. Logan Allen is not a bad pitcher. I'm sure he's going to have a couple other bad starts during the course of the season, but this is the type of guy that could come out next game, strike out six or seven in six plus innings and get the win, allowing no earned runs on two, three hits. So we got lucky and we were able to take advantage of a guy who just did not do his job. Anything else you guys want to add to Allen? All right, here we go. Terry, take it away. Who are your duds?
I am going outside the box. My duds for the series are the Nesson crew. We can say what we want about this team. You know, it's been frustrating at times, but it's still at least been an interesting season. It's been compelling, you know, from game one up through today. And, there's been a lot of interesting moments. And this Nesson crew, it's just flat. It's just flat. And I know Middlebrooks doesn't seem to be a popular guy on that crew. I actually like him on the radio better than I do on TV. But even with Merlone on there, and Merlone is my favorite of all the color guys, and I was happy to see that he's going to get the most, you know, the most games. I think he's going to do 120 or so. It's still not a great broadcast, and maybe it's O'Brien, and I'm not an O'Brien guy anyway, but I don't know how to make it exciting. I can't imagine the ratings are like through the roof, and just for the heck of it, I did a poll. I did this on Twitter. This was what, 3 or 4 days ago. I simply asked everyone on Twitter, who do you want as the Nesson play-by-play guy, Dave O'Brien or someone else? 65% said someone else. Only 34%, roughly one third of the Red Sox fan base likes Dave O'Brien. And I've been saying it for a while, and you can kind of cop out and say, well, the Red Sox weren't a playoff team the last few years, so that's why Nesson ratings are bad. I think part of it is on the crew. And it's not a good product. And Nesson and Red Sox ownership, I mean, the Red Sox own 80% of Nesson. The Bruins own the other 20%. But, you know, they took a lot of heat when they got rid of Orsillo. And this isn't an ownership group that really likes to admit they're wrong, you know. But I think it's long past time with O'Brien being the play-by-play guy. It's boring as hell. He's not captivating. It's just not fun.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem the crew has is they're not Remy and Orsillo or Eckersley. because forever we were spoiled with the best, in my opinion. And they obviously butchered the Orsillo thing, and he's still thriving in San Diego, well-loved, getting high grades. Look, to me, the games are interesting if the play on the field is interesting. And I, you know, frankly, listen to a lot of games on the radio or on mute in the background. So I haven't noticed a real issue. It's not the best crew because we were, you know, the only thing we can really compare them to, if you're in your middle age like I am, is Remy Orsillo and Eckersley. And no one's probably going to be able to replicate that. So they're fine. They're not great. I don't think they're terrible. You know, but to me, I think if they produce on the field, I'm going to be interested. If they don't, I won't.
But it could be better, though. Like, and like, even if they bring in a new crew, it could take a year or two for the chemistry to really, you know, evolve into something great. But I just think, man, it could be so much better.
The issue there is they're still doing the rotation thing. Like, settle on a duo, have them do 90% of the games and build chemistry and you know, but they're choosing not to do that. They're rolling people through. You know, I personally, I don't think Euculus is any good. You know, he stands out to me, but I couldn't stand him when he played, so I have a bias. But again, you know, if we're winning, if you put a regular crew out there, I think it's fine. It shouldn't be the reason why you're entertained or you're not.
So whenever anybody tries to bring up commentators of anything Red Sox related, the two names that you already mentioned are Don Orsillo and Jeremy Remy. And I really don't know if there is ever going to be anyone even remotely close to those two. The chemistry that they had both, and you can Google like Don Orsillo, Jeremy Remy, funny moments. I'm not going to repeat them on the air, but
you keep saying Jeremy Remy.
Jerry Remy. I'm looking at Jeremy. Jerry Remy and Don Orsillo. But if you look up Jerry Remy, Don Orsillo, funny moments, all you have to do is say funny moment one, and there's always going to be one that pops up above the rest. And then right after that one is the pizza toss. Like those are the moments that, if you're a Red Sox fan, whether you were there at the game, you saw it on TV, you heard it on the radio, everybody knows about the pizza toss. Everybody knows about the whoops moment that Jerry Remy said on the air, and just dead silence. And then you hear Don Orsillo laughing. I can't get behind these two in the same way, not even remotely close to the way that all of us were able to get behind both of those two. So when Don left, it was like a shot to the gut for everybody. Everybody loved Don Orsillo. He was like everybody's, you know, uncle, for lack of a better term. Like, we all loved watching and listening to him because it was exciting, whether it was baseball or not baseball. And with Jerry Remy, the same thing. It was exciting if it was baseball or not baseball. With these two, it's just not like Terry. I think you said last year that you would mute the game and listen to it on the radio because it was just better that way. I think you said that last year, right?
No, no, not exactly. I would watch the away feed.
Okay.
My apologies. And the thing that drove me nuts, besides not liking the Nesson crew, is they try to find ways to pump this team up, and it was a bad baseball team. So I didn't want to hear that. You know what I mean? So I just flipped over to the other one, and there are some crews. I think Baltimore's got a really good crew. The Brewers have an excellent crew. Brad Anderson is phenomenal, and he does some of the TBS games in the playoffs. And that would be my number one guy to go get. I'd love to see Mike Monaco get a chance as well. He'd probably be my number two pick. But yeah, I'd watch the away feeds. And this year I went back to Nesson, you know, because I thought the team would be better. And I think we have been, despite only being a couple games above 500. But, you know, there's not one aspect of this team that I'm overly pessimistic on right now.
Right.
But yeah, and I don't know. I just don't.
But that's the thing, is you're never, we're trying, and they may not be trying or think that they need to try that hard, but you're trying to replace gents that have been in the box that were one of a kind. You know, they were the creme de la creme guys. And it would take a long time for any of these guys to replace them or try to even be remotely close to their level and status. Like, it's just, it's not going to happen. It'd be like, you know, like the Dodgers had Vin Scully for what, 60 or 70 years. Now they have a guy named Joe Davis. He's great, but he's not Vin Scully. He's awesome. He's done world, you know.
I'll take Joe Davis in Boston, honestly.
I would too, yeah. Right? But like Joe Davis walks in knowing he's not Vin Scully. He's done a great job, but he's not Vin. And anybody who's watched baseball knows Vin Scully, right? So I think the same thing, like anybody in baseball at this point should know who Don Orsillo is. I don't think anybody knows who OB is outside of like a couple of markets. That's it. I don't think if you ask the Padres who's Dave O'Brien, they would know who it is. Oh,
I just,
that's the guy that replaced Don Orsillo. That's who that is. That's who Dave O'Brien is.
And he twisted Nesson's arm to get that job too. And then Nesson went with it. It's just so nuts. But my final thought on this is if the team has a new energy and you can put a new energy into the broadcast booth, you've got all the ingredients for something special, you know, a breath of fresh air, something that can pull in not just new fans, but kind of get the older fans back into it too.
Yeah, but the problem is a lot of older fans, I think, were pretty upset with ownership, how they ran the team, and then also the way that Don Orsillo was removed from his position. I thought it was a Bush League decision. It was done in a cowardly way, and I think some people never forgave or forgot, you know?
A couple of comments here. Red Sox diehard says Middlebrooks is boring in the booth. I just think he's very vanilla. I like him on the radio. Our good pal, Johnny Fontaine, says Charlie is right. They were irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And then Brad Sandler says he likes Will Fleming more. I do not like Will Fleming. I do not want him anywhere near that booth. The Chicago White Sox did not want Will Fleming. The worst team in baseball that's been a dumpster fire all except for 2005 not want the team that thought Tony La Russa was a good idea hated Will Fleming.
Taking shots. Speaking of taking shots, this one is my dud, who honestly should be counting his lucky stars that there was a net in between him and Jaren Duran. This is going to be my dud. My dud was the fan that decided to say one of the most utterly stupid, cowardly, inhumane things to say to a ball player on the field who has dealt with mental health problems. And I don't, Terry, are we allowed to quote tweet on the show? Is that something, or should we kind of paraphrase it? How would you like to go?
We have an explicit tag, so we can technically say whatever we want.
So Jemai Webster at Webster on TV had said, and quote from multiple fans that had heard it, this fan in his infinite wisdom decided to spew and say, Jaren, you should go kill yourself. End quote. Is what I heard him say. It's utterly incomprehensible how someone could bare their soul and you think it's cute to use as a diss. This was indeed the quote fan, end quote, and he should never be welcomed back to a ballpark for the rest of his natural born life. How dumb was this comment? It was so dumb. Fans from the opposing team, your own fans, were all trying to get you thrown out of the game. On top of the fact that the player that you decided to piss off, you're blessed that there was a net and a boatload of fans, security, and teammates and managers blocking him from getting to you, or you would have been learning to eat with your feet. That's how dumb you are. Jaren Duran's on the list of people that you just don't piss off. Don't say something stupid. He might really mess you up. And truth be told, I kind of wish someone did. And it's going to come out. They're going to find out this person's name. It's going to be thrown all over Twitter, X, everywhere. This guy's probably going to lose his job. He's going to be kicked out of his church if he even goes to one. It's just going to be bad. It's going to be really, really bad. Because in 2025, this is the climate, folks. You can't say stuff like this. And if you think you're going to be able to get away with it, you're an idiot. You're a moron. And people will go scorched earth on you trying to find out your name, where you live. And guess what? It's not going to be only you that gets hurt. It's going to be you. It's going to be your wife if you're married. It's going to be your kids. You're going to have to go into witness protection because Cleveland's not a forgiving city. They will find out who you are. And here's the other thing. Insulting someone or trying to diss someone about mental health when they've had mental health problems and have been open and come forward about mental health, not a smart play. Really, really stupid. Ever since COVID, mental health has been a very, very talked about, no longer taboo subject. It's welcome to talk about. It's great to be open about it because now we have a boatload, plethora of resources to seek out, therapists, groups to talk to, all sorts of stuff. You thinking that tells you how low of a person you are, scum of the bottom of the earth. I never wish ill on anyone, but I'm making an exception today. I really hope that you get what's coming to you. And I hope that no amount of apologies gets you out from under that situation. So to that dumb fan, you know what? You already know you're getting the pinky because you're not even good enough for the other one. You're that garbage. So it's coming for you. And I'll leave it there. Jeremy.
I don't know that I have a ton to add. It takes a real POS to assuming he went and watched or at least watched the portion of the documentary about Jaren's mental health struggles to then go to the game and target the player. I would assume it's premeditated. He went to the ballpark planning it. And if all those things are real, then this guy is a real POS. And I don't really want to give him any more energy than he's already gotten. And he'll get, I'm sure, doxxed tomorrow on the internet. And it's going to be a big problem for him. So, you know.
Yeah, better get your LinkedIn profile set up. Terry.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it, Charlie. But I hope we do find out his name. I hope he gets fired from his job. You know, I think the one fan that got tortured more than anyone, and in this instance, it was more unfortunate than anything, was Steve Bartman. But man, I'd love to see that type of intensity against whoever this guy was. And unfortunately, I think he's going to be a little hard to identify on camera because he was wearing a hat. It was a Guardians hat and he was wearing sunglasses. So not an easy thing to make out. And, but I hope we do figure it out. And it's just,
it won't be hard.
Short of, you know, the N-bomb. And I mean, this is right up there. You know, it's on the top tier of most toxic things you can possibly say. Yeah. And, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, Guardians fans were heckling him. And, you know, I shouldn't say very few. There's not a ton of situations where, you know, sports fans will ever be united, you know, for one thing, but that was one of them. And, it was nice to see, and it'll be fun if we do figure out who it was and, you know, his house gets egged and his tires get slashed, and I'm not going to wish violence on him, but I hope his life is miserable for a while.
I mean, I think a little violence maybe a nice little whooping. I mean, he told someone to, you know, off himself. So you're that bold to say that. This is someone who probably has been coddled by mommy and daddy, has had a lot of stuff handed to him, probably has no idea what real accountability or consequences are. You know, the type of person that's never had to fight a day in their life. And this is going to be a massive reality check for him. And Steve Bartman is a pretty wild comp for, you know, a different set of circumstances. This was a guy that was in the wrong place at the wrong time and didn't even know what was happening because he was listening to the game on headphones. This is like that long ago. But Moises Alou could have handled that situation perhaps a little bit better to help out that fan. But I mean, didn't Bartman leave Chicago, change his name, like everything? And he's been out of the public light ever since. Didn't he move to like Florida or something?
I don't know, but Theo Epstein reached out to him at the start of the 2017 season and wanted him to throw out the first pitch. You know, just as a full circle moment, you know, we finally won. You know, all the demons are gone now, and Bartman actually declined, and that was 13 years later. So right. it still bothered him. This real quick, I'll read it super quick. It was a statement from the Cleveland Guardians. They said, quote, "We are aware of the situation that took place during today's game between a fan and one of the Red Sox players that violated our fan conduct policy. We recognize the gravity of the behavior at issue here and take very seriously the conduct of this nature. We apologize to the Red Sox organization, the player involved, fans in the area, and are addressing the situation. We have identified the fan in question and will work with Major League Baseball regarding the next steps. We strive to provide the best experience to visiting players and fans, and that fell short today." You know, so nice thing. I still hope the name gets leaked, you know.
It will. But
we'll see.
It's 2025. It's gonna happen. Anything else you gents want to add? That is gonna do it for the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.